Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
And it is another edition of the Ira Kaufman Podcast, brought to you all season long by Bill Curry Ford, right here on JoeBucksFan.com. Pinch hitting today as the driver of this year's program. I am Tom Lang up in the capital city of Tallahassee. They sent the bullpen cart all the way up here for me, and now I get to do this for the first time. This is a distinct honor for me to introduce the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the custodian of Canton himself, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you this morning?
Tally ho, Mr. Lang. Tally ho. You and I should be in jolly old London, but it didn't turn out that way. Instead, you're in a studio in Tallahassee. I'm in Daytona Beach trying to get some R&R before I go home. But we have a very important game in front of us to discuss. I understand it's only week 6, but that doesn't make this matchup any less important, Thomas.
Well, I remember listening to an episode just a few weeks back when you said the loss, 4 o'clock game at home against Danny Dimes. You said it was a giant kick to the balls, and it feels that way every time the Bucks slip up, and it's going to feel that way every time the Bucks go back on the bubble, outside of it, or just barely inside of it. This is a massively important game at 2-3, and it's going to be an early one, 9:30 in the morning. Bleary-eyed Bucks fans are going to be joining you where this weekend?
I'll be at Buffalo Wild Wings, Tom, in South Tampa, along Dale Mabry. It is where we had our draft party in April. We got a huge turnout for that. I'm expecting a nice crowd for state. Tom, the thing that's really frustrating Bruce Arians at this juncture is, his mantra is stack them up. And they've been unable to follow up a win with a win. I mean, that's part of the reason I'm 0-5 picking Buck games. Tom, I don't know what's going on with this team. I can't figure them out. I think I got a lot better handle on other teams than the Bucks. When I think they're going to win against the Giants, against the Niners, they lose. When I think they're going to lose against the Rams, they win. So which Buck team is going to show up in Tottenham? We're about to find out.
Yeah, we are about to find out. I do the Joe Bolts fan podcast here on this website, and the Lightning were 0-4 in the playoffs this April. So I know you're 0-5, but I think Bucks fans would probably prefer – you end up picking the Panthers here at the end of the program. They'll find out in just a little bit. But I have a slew of questions here. Some I prepared myself. The Joes have sent me some questions they want to make sure you hit on, because it's been a fiery edition this week, the previous edition of the Ira Kaufman podcast brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. So I'm going to rapid fire these things, and we'll get into some Bucks talk, mixing the Scuttle Bucks and the Custodian. You good with that?
Let's have it, baby.
All right, let's do it. Number one. And this is the number one question for all Bucks fans after Mr. Kappa broke his arm in quarter number two. DeMar Dotson got pancaked himself a few times and obviously came up lame with a hamstring injury. Offensive line is always a hot button in this town. Your thoughts on Earl Watford and Josh Wells starting for Kappa and Dotson?
It's a real problem, Tom. Now, look, after they scored 55 against the Rams, I thought the game ball should have went to the five offensive linemen. Yeah. I thought they made it all happen. Good run game, gave Winston all kinds of time to find receivers downfield. They got to New Orleans, and they had their worst game of the year. Winston under constant duress, a very talented front four by New Orleans. But I got to tell you, Carolina's got some weapons up front, too. Mario Addison's got 6.5 sacks. Brian Burns, who you know well from his days at Florida State,
yep,
off to a good start, taking the middle of the first round. A lot of Buck fans thought the Bucs should have moved back and taken Brian Burns. He's got 3.5 sacks, returned a fumble for a touchdown. Of course, Gerald McCoy still lurking there with a chip on his shoulder. Well, you know, Watford was brought here as a veteran that they can rely on maybe as a backup. He can play multiple positions. But Kappa was playing well. As far as Wells, we don't know much about him. We saw him get pancaked last week.
Yes, we did.
They picked him up off the street. It's going to be a problem because I think they have to establish a running game, so that Winston is not throwing the ball 45 times against a talented Carolina defense. It's not as good as the Saints defense, but you know, the Bucs only scored 21 points in Charlotte, or 20 points in Charlotte. It's not like they marched up and down the field. They still got Luke Kuechly. I think it's a big issue going into Sunday's matchup.
Well, and think about the way games are usually looking in London. You know, I know they put field turf out there last week, but usually the weather, it's a little bit muggy. The field typically is slippery. And if there's going to be some rain showers, at least at the beginning of this game, and a little bit of winds, how much can you really pass the ball? If I was handicapping this game, Ira, from the first time the Bucs met Carolina to this one and everybody was healthy, I'd say the good news for Bucs fans is down the stretch, the Bucs are able to run the football. You know, that long drive towards the end of the game, they end up kicking the field goal to go up 6 points. That's because the Bucs were consistently able to run the football, and I don't know that that's going to be something they can establish because they're telegraphing to the world, you got to run behind the left side. So I guess the question is, do you think Leftwich and Arians scheme around the backup lineman by going completely irregular because it's the week before a bye and you might as well throw the kitchen sink at the Panthers?
I think you bring up a great point in terms of the weather. From what I can tell from the forecast, it's going to rain all weekend, as it often does in London. And that could affect the game plan. There's no question. Look, Ronald Jones is a big key. When the Bucs are doing well, Ronald Jones is doing well. He wasn't much of a factor in Charlotte. That's the game that jumps out. That was the Peyton Barber game. I believe he carried 23 times, and he was fairly effective. Other than that, Jones has clearly been their best rusher. They didn't establish him in New Orleans. It ended up being a big problem. The play action wasn't effective because they hadn't established the run game. The guy who I think is really unheralded is Ryan Jensen. Now, he didn't have his best game in New Orleans, but he's been playing great football, much, much better than he did his first year in Tampa. So he's going to be out there, and he's been getting a very good push up the middle. I think Watson will be functional, and I think Wells is going to need help, especially if they move Addison around to the left side of the defense and going up against Wells. He's a talented rusher. You've got Burns on the other side, who's going to be tough to handle for Smith. Look, Arians has been at this a long time. He knows that he's got two backups on the right side. Good coaches put players in position to succeed. Belichick proves that every darn week. He takes out your best weapon. Yeah. Everybody knows it. Somehow, some way, he's not going to let that one guy beat you. Well, let's see what Arians and Leftwich can come up with to compensate. Kappa had been playing very well. We will see what happens on Sunday, but certainly you must tweak the game plan to adjust for these two new starters.
Yeah, it feels like a game that you just kind of got to get through. However it happens, you just get the W and you move on, because that's what the NFL is all about anyway. It's not about style points. You're not trying to appease a playoff committee at the end of the year. It's just about getting the result. And I got to say, too, you know, back at that first Carolina game, Ronald Jones did break off one good run, and I think they were going to stick with him, but he came up lame. He had a toe injury, and that's why Peyton Barber ends up closing the game. But Peyton did have success from the word go. He was able to establish a presence on the ground for Tampa. We'll see what that shuffle looks like. And then to your point about Jensen, game one against Carolina, remember, he baited Gerald McCoy into a key 15-yard penalty, the old retaliation penalty, and that's what Jensen does. He's really going to have to be mean again on Sunday morning.
Tom, when they asked McCoy this week, the Charlotte media, what he remembered about that little tussle with Jensen, McCoy's answer was, I can't recall. I can't recall. So, you know, that's classic McCoy. Part of the reason Buck fans never really embraced him, Buck Nation. Look, he's McCoy's hacked off. He's still mad about the way the Bucks treated him. The fact remains, he's not been a big factor for Carolina. But you got to say, immediately after saying that, the Panthers were left for dead, Tom, after that Bucs game.
Yeah.
Ron Rivera's job looked like it was in jeopardy. They were 0-2. Newton was a mess. They were going to have to turn to a backup quarterback. And what has happened? They, not the Bucs, have stacked wins, just like Arians wants. They've stacked them. Yeah. 3 in a row. So there's a lot of confidence on the Carolina side going into this matchup.
Well, and if Kyle Allen's a little bit more accurate down the field, right, than Cam was, there were some throws to be had there in the second half of game one. If even one or two of those are completed, then who knows how that game finishes out. But real quick, one more question on the offense. It's a two-part question. So let's just say that the running game is average at best. You have some hits, but you can't really count on it. Two questions. The big picture question is, what grade would you give Jameis Winston through the first five games of the season, and how important is it, do you think, for the storyline and personally for Jameis to play well on Sunday morning to stave off potential bye week chatter about his future in Tampa Bay?
I'd give him a B, Tom. I'd give him a B.
Okay.
I might have given him an A- going into the New Orleans game. I didn't like Winston's play from the start in the Superdome. I thought he was jittery. I thought he wasn't sharp. And then as the game went on, they were hitting him so often that I thought, and this happens all the time in football, I thought sometimes he was hearing footsteps when they weren't even there.
Yeah.
And that's a natural thing. You know, look, there might be three or four quarterbacks in the league that don't do that, but that's rare company. You know, that's the Bradys and the Breezes of the world. I didn't think Winston played well. I'd give him a B. As far as how he plays this week, look, I've said it for a long time, Tom. A lot of people think I'm being very simplistic. I understand that. They say it's not fair. I understand that. But, Tom, there's only one way. Only one way NFL quarterbacks are judged. Wins. It's the only way. Otherwise, you know, you're Jeff George. Otherwise, you're Jeff George.
Yeah.
Talented and can't win. Otherwise, you're Kirk Cousins. Talented, we don't trust you, not enough wins. That's just the way it is. Should Winston be responsible for the play of 21 other starters? No. But that is the situation. So, Tom, if they go 2-4 going into the bye week, it's going to raise all the old questions about Winston. Is he a winner? Can you win with this guy? He's had one winning season out of four, 9-7. And they were 8-5 that year, and he went 1-2 down the stretch. That didn't help. Didn't play particularly well against Dallas or New Orleans in must-win games that season. Mm-hmm. I believe that was Cutter's first year as head coach. So he still needs to quell his critics. They're out there. They may not be the majority, but they're loud, and they're sizable. And if they're 2-4, that is going to embolden the skeptics.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on both fronts. I think B is about the right answer. You know, if it was a B minus or a B plus, I wouldn't blame anybody for saying that. He looks more comfortable in the offense. And if you look at the numbers, and I know people roll their eyes when they hear the numbers argument, but if you look at them after the San Francisco game, he's been quite sharp. I also would agree with you that in the first quarter of the game up at the Superdome, it's easy to see, oh, man, he doesn't like what he sees. He doesn't feel comfortable where he's standing. He makes a good throw to Godwin rolling out for the touchdown, but Jameis always makes good throws when he rolls out. And then you got in the second half, he finally settled down for me when he hits Godwin on the comeback on the fourth down play. But how far into the game is that? That's like way deep into the game, especially one that if you get, you're in the driver's seat in the division. I fully agree with you, Ira, that people judge quarterbacks on wins and losses. I don't think it's the most informed way to do it, but the discussion is the discussion. Perception is perception. And so if you want to quell the chatter, the easiest way to do that is to win some ball games. We'll be right back on the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford all season long. We've got a couple of quick words for you, and we got more questions on the other side.
Don't forget, Bucks fans, you can watch Sunday's game, the 9:30 kickoff, with Ira Kaufman himself at Buffalo Wild Wings in South Tampa, right on South Dale Mabry Highway. All the details are at joebucksfan.com. If you're south of the Bay in Sarasota, Buffalo Wild Wings is also accommodating Bucks fans. Sunday morning, early opening, University Parkway location. Go to joebucksfan.com for all the details and find your local Buffalo Wild Wings at buffalowildwings.com. Pin Chasers is your home for Thursday night bowling, unlimited bowling every Thursday night at Pin Chasers, $10.99 starting at 9 p.m. and enjoy $1 Miller Lights while you bowl. The details are all at pinchasers.net. Free shoes, as always. It's available at all three Tampa Bay area locations. And that's just one of the daily specials at Pin Chasers. Check them all out, including two on Sunday. PinChasers.net is the website. Pin Chasers, more than 60 years serving the Tampa Bay community.
And the custodian is back, the Sage. He is here. You know, Ira, honestly, I don't know how you feel about adding more titles to your name. It's like Apollo Creed and Rocky, and Rocky gets tired of, hey, you done yet with all your names? What about this, the Baron of B-Dubs, the Baron of Buffalo Wild Wings? How does that sit with you?
It sits very nicely. You know, Tom, last week I was at Buffalo Wild Wings in Ybor City, beautiful Ybor City. The place was packed, absolutely packed. I had Buck fans crawling all over me. One guy asked me to sit with him. He seemed like a good man, so I did. We had a good time together. We did enjoy the game. And then, you know, people are buying me drinks. They're picking up tabs. The Baron of Buffalo Wild Wings is not a bad title. I'm kind of embracing it right now.
Okay, at least for this week. You were in my neck of the woods 2 weeks ago when you were at Oldsmar. I'm from East Lake Landsbrook area. That's where my parents live now, so that would have been the
well,
one.
Show up and say hello, Mr. Lang.
I got a team to cover here in Tallahassee, and they've got offensive line problems. That, I mean, if Buck fans think it's going to be bad this weekend, you got no idea what's going on in Tallahassee. But that's another topic for another show here in ESPN Tallahassee Studios. Let's get back to the questions. And the tight end position, O.J. Howard specifically, he made one of his best catches of the season, game four of the ALDS this week. Not too many impact plays so far on the field for the Buccaneers, though. So you've had more time now, Ira, to think about how the Bucs are not, using the tight ends. Where do you stand on the issue as we record on a Friday morning?
You know, Tom, as is the case so often when one part of the game is struggling, there's been all kinds of explanations, all kinds of things that I believe are a bunch of excuses. Oh, Arians doesn't like to throw to his tight ends in Arizona. He didn't use them that much. Guess what? Guess what, Tom? He didn't have O.J. Howard in Arizona.
Yeah.
He didn't have an instant mismatch. He had mediocre tight ends, and he had Larry Fitzgerald, and Michael Floyd was gaining 1,000 yards at that time. He didn't have the tight ends. Otherwise, you're hearing, well, you know, the scheme doesn't really, you know, want to accentuate the tight end. Nonsense. Nonsense. Tom, there's no reason that Jameis Winston doesn't want to hit O.J. Howard, you know, target him 8 times a game and hit him 6 times a game. Nonsense. O.J. Howard's got to break free. He's got to beat his man. He's got to get open. If he gets open, Winston's going to throw it to him. And I don't like what's going on in terms of, you know, I love Godwin's production. And I dare say, Tom, and I know you'll agree with me.
Yeah.
A lot of teams on this in this league, he would be the number one receiver. And guess what? The team the Bucs are playing on Sunday is one of them. He'd be the number one receiver, the number one target for the Carolina Panthers. That's just a fact. He's better than anybody Carolina's got. And I understand that Godwin's production is outstanding. But part of the success going forward is going to be Winston spreading the ball around. And if they're going to double Mike Evans, which is all I'm hearing about, is how they're doubling him every time Mike Evans breathes, there's two guys on him. Well, why can't other guys get open besides Godwin? Nobody else is getting double teamed. As far as O.J. Howard's concerned, potential, Tom, that's a dangerous word.
It's a
dangerous word. You know what it means? It means you ain't done it yet. You ain't done it yet. And that's the word being thrown around about O.J. Howard. I've gotten to know Jimmy Giles, the great former tight end of the Bucs. He's in the Ring of Honor. He was big. He was fast. He was a matchup problem. And Jimmy Giles says when he looked at O.J. Howard, his body type, how he played at Alabama, he thought of Jimmy Giles. He thought of himself.
Yeah.
And he wants to sit down with Howard and explain some of the nuances of how you elevate your game as a professional. It hasn't happened. I'm trying to be the middleman over here, Tom. I'm trying to arrange a meeting between a Ring of Honor inductee and a guy who hasn't done it yet. We'll see what happens in that regard. But through 5 weeks, Tom, I think you can make a strong argument that O.J. Howard is the most disappointing Buccaneer through 5 weeks.
Well, yeah, I think that's I think it's a safe bet at this point. And just to note for anybody out there, if somebody walks up to you and they're wearing, let's say, I don't know, a Philadelphia 76ers hat, and they say that they want to be a middleman, you listen to what they say. My family comes from Brooklyn. We know. You listen to what the middleman has to say, and you let them do what they need to do and then get out of the way. For OJ, though, honestly, if you want to scheme somebody open, you can scheme somebody open. Scotty Miller comes into the game last week in New Orleans, and it looks like they've got three or four plays devised for Scotty, which is ridiculous to me because what has he proven on a Sunday at full NFL speed? I get that you want him to be a lid lifter, especially with the Perryman injury, but it just goes to show you, if you want to devise a look or two to get somebody going, you can do that. And for me, it seems like Chris Godwin is the feature player in this offense, and the running game is probably feature player number two. Mike Evans is along for the ride. The tight ends are along for the ride. And then whoever the lid lifter is going to be has a player two in to stretch the defense down the field. It doesn't seem like the feature players that we expected are the guys, the go-to guys on a given Sunday. It can't be that way if Mike Evans gets shut out two times in the first 5 weeks of the season. I get that he was sick in week one, and I'll give him a pass, too, that you got to play a short week Thursday after you're coming off of an illness. But if you are one of the premier talents in the game and you're getting shut out, and then you've got one of the lid-lifting tight ends in the game, and he's not putting up numbers anywhere close to a guy like Evan Engram who came into Tampa and dominated, you got to ask questions about distribution and the way the offense is schemed, don't you?
2 points, Tom. You know, you brought up Scotty Miller, and I want to point this out, and I know you remember the play. Miller went down the right side on this particular snap. He was covered like a blanket, Thomas, like a blanket.
Yeah, yeah.
No separation. Winston locked in on Scotty Miller from the time the ball was snapped. It was one of the few plays where Winston had time, nobody in his face, and he ended up throwing the ball to Miller. The ball had zero chance to be completed, zero.
Yeah.
And it was not. It fell harmlessly incomplete. He was locked and loaded on Miller. Now, if you're going to do that on anybody, you don't do it on Scotty Miller.
Right.
So I really didn't understand that point. We need more distribution here. And I'm gonna make one more point about Mike Evans. Since he was drafted in 2014, he's probably been the Buccaneers' best player. That's tough to argue against. He's done a lot of things. 1,000-yard seasons. He's up there with very few guys that have ever done it every year, you know, their first 5 years. But, Tom, I think we have to say this. If there's one knock on Evans, one, it is that, you know, there are a handful of cornerbacks that seem to crawl into his head. Mm-hmm. I mean, Xavier Rhodes, Bradbury, who he's about to face again in Carolina. Lattimore is now part of that group.
Oh, is he ever? Yeah.
And these are good players. They're good. You know, Marcus Lattimore is a heck of a player. He is. But no cornerback. He's not Darrell Revis in his prime. He's not. And no cornerback, you know, shy of Revis and Deion Sanders, you know, should be able to shut down a receiver as gifted as Mike Evans.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that he's double-teamed every snap. I don't believe that's true. Especially with the ascension of Godwin, these teams are not blind. They don't want Godwin catching 125 yards every week. So, you know, it's up to Evans, and here's Bradbury waiting for him in London to show that, you know, he's matured. I don't have any questions about his physical skills, nor do you. But there are certain days when he doesn't look anything more than an ordinary receiver. Look, last year he had 8 100-yard games, Tom. This year he's got one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not worried about Mike Evans, but I need the real Mike Evans to show up on Sunday.
It's like what you were talking about with Winston in the first half. You could see it through a couple of drives. The ball is elevated a little bit. You look in his face when the camera allows you to, and you see somebody who he doesn't look all that comfortable with what he's seeing. Evans can get that far away look in his eyes too, Ira, and you could see it pretty early. I mean, it was almost like that first ball that you could call it a drop if you wanted to really argue for Winston. It's a play that could be made. I don't argue should, but it could be made. And the moment that that ball hits the turf, you see it's almost like he's looking to the ceiling of the Superdome. And he has that look sometimes. And you worry about it when you see your quarterback and then your star receiver both looking like that in the first quarter of the game. It's almost like they're lambs being led to slaughter or something. And yet, with all of those issues, to be optimistic for a second, you've got the ball down one score. I don't know if I like that third down and two play call where you call a rub route for Bobo Wilson. But enough about the play calling, I guess. We could switch it to the defense. Devin White is said to be returning. I know he was said to be active last week, and then Bruce flipped the story at the end. Emergency situation only was when Devin White was going to be available. He will start this week. It's kind of like his second debut this time over the pond. Ira, your thoughts on Devin White so far, and obviously the importance of his return.
Look. It is a very small sample size, Tom. I'll be the first to admit it. But I will also acknowledge that at this point, Devin White hasn't done much to, counter-argue the critics who said he shouldn't have been taken at number five. Now, look, he hasn't played very much. I still think the kid has a bundle of talent that needs to be unleashed. Bowles should be the guy that can utilize him in a variety of spots. What I think is interesting, Tom, is that the one thing the Buck defense has done very well, look, they've done two things well. Shaq Barrett has been absolutely unbelievable. That's number one.
Yep.
Although he was neutralized to a great extent in New Orleans. Number two, they have isolated the one guy that they want to do a job on, and they've done it. Whether it's Barkley, in the first half, Kittle, although Kittle had two touchdowns recalled in that game, we got to remember that by penalty by the Niners. But you know what I mean.
Sure.
Certainly McCaffrey, week two.
Yeah, Kamara wasn't that big of a factor. LA. Yeah, Kamara wasn't that big of a factor.
But wasn't a big factor.
Yeah.
And even Kamara last week. They did a pretty good job on him. And that is without White making any plays. So here he is. He's going to be part of the effort on McCaffrey. Now, I thought part of the reason he was drafted, maybe a big reason, was this is a division with guys like Kamara and McCaffrey, and maybe White has the speed to stay up with these guys on those little swing passes that, usually just wear you down. I mean, they're 7-yard gains all the time.
Yeah.
And you can't stop it. We'll see if he plays a role in a game like this. I was waiting for him to show up last week. Every time I looked up, I saw Kevin Minter, who, by the way, has played well, I think, filling in for White.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, hats off to Minter. He's done a nice job. Buck fans are waiting for the real Devin White. They want to see him Sunday in London. It is Devin White's time to shine. If he's healthy, we will see.
Yeah, and you don't want to have this thing linger for another month where your talking point on O.J. Howard is the talking point on Devin White, which is potential. Because, as you say, potential is expectations unrealized at that point. Well, we'll see, too. We'll see how confident he is on the turf. I know I'm harping on this for a second time, but over there in England, the playing surface is really important. When it was actual grass, people would slip all over the place. We'll see how confident he is on that leg pretty early on. If he's timid because of the surface, that means he doesn't feel 100%. But I think everybody, they want to see their number one pick play at 100% speed and using the instincts, because Bruce Arians isn't afraid to heap a ton of praise on him. There are times that you want to take care of a rookie and temper expectations, but you've been there in the press conferences all year long. Bruce, even this week, he's unafraid to heap a ton of praise on Devin White as a different type of player. I'll ask you one more question about Devin. Is that the word out of practice? That this guy is actually that type of instinctive freak on the football field? Or do you think that, the hype machine may be a little too much too soon?
Well, we thought that way, Tom, about this new and improved Ronald Jones.
Yeah.
We heard it all during OTAs. We heard it all during training camp, and a lot of us, probably you included, looked at it rather skeptically.
Sure.
Let's see what happens when the games count. And Ronald Jones has lived up to expectation. I mean, he's averaging, you know, 4-7 a carry, whatever. He's looked good. He's running with a purpose. He does look different. So if Arians is going to heap praise on White. Now, one more aspect about White, Tom, I think it's worth mentioning. You know, look, these NFL teams, it's copycat. They saw what the Saints did against Barrett. They quickly realized where Barrett was coming from. They slid the protection over to Barrett. Why wouldn't you do that? He had, Tom, what I said, and I've been looking at football more than you have over the years. You know, as Isbeth, you know, constantly points out, you know, I've been up there in age. But, Tom, I said that I don't believe a defensive player has ever had a better opening month than Shaq Barrett. And I stand by that in terms of the first four games. I don't know what more a guy could do. But the point is, other guys are not stepping up, Tom. They're not. He's got 9 out of 11 sacks, you know, and you would think with the pressure that he's put on, you know, a sack or two would fall in the Ndamukong Suh's way, or Vea, or Nassim.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened. So getting back to White, I think part of his skill set is as a blitzer, Tom.
Yeah.
Up the middle pressure. He's got very, you know, his closing speed is extraordinary. I saw that in training camp. Extraordinary. He makes up ground in a hurry. And I think Bowles is starting to realize, hey, Shaq Barrett needs help. We got to loosen things up on Barrett. Otherwise, you know, he's going to have to go through 2-3 guys every passing down. And that's going to neutralize their biggest weapon on defense. Maybe we will see White as a blitzer. Levante David in the past has been an effective blitzer. What I'm saying is, if these guys around Barrett don't step up, Tom, going forward, they are going to have to use those inside linebackers as part of the blitz package and a prominent part of it.
Well, yeah, and that's certainly what they did the first time these two teams played, is they brought a ton of pressures, especially in that second half on Cam. And that's what Todd does, and it's what Bruce said when he first took the gig and Todd was named his defensive coordinator. The only time I'm really going to talk to him is to tell him to blitz more. So I fully agree with you. And honestly, if you project this thing out a few weeks, if JPP is ready to go by week 8, week 9, and you have Barrett on the other side, and you have Devin White as a potential threat in the blitz game, you could see where the pass rush gains that second element. As much as I love Nassib, and he'll have a game a year where he goes for 2 or 2.5 sacks and maybe 4 tackles for loss, he seems to get to the stage but then trip all over himself before he walks up to the microphone. He puts himself in position, but he doesn't finish consistently. But if you can get past this little hurdle, get JPP in the fold and a healthy Devin White for the backstretch of the schedule, which you've pointed out this week is really juicy. I mean, you got to be licking your chops. You might be able to do some damage here. And with that said, how important is Sunday morning's game when it comes to looking at the October 29th trade deadline for Tampa?
I think it's all important. Look, worst case scenario, Tom, and we don't want to think about it. 2-4 at the bye week. The depression carries over. They play a mediocre Tennessee team and lose. And I guess what I'm saying is, if you lose this game, there is a possibility that by the time you get back home, November 10th, you're out of it. I mean, it's a possibility. I don't think it's going to happen, but if you're 3-3, I think you're still in it, and I think your scenario's not far-fetched. And, Tom, look what happened in New Orleans. There were so many snaps where Bridgewater had absolutely nobody in his face, a total clear vision downfield.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? Well, he exploits an inexperienced secondary. And Vernon Hargreaves, Tom, God bless him. He's made the play of the year. He, you know, that was a huge play in Charlotte, and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
He's a very smart player, Tom, but we don't see the ball skills. We just don't see it. He's supposed to be, the veteran back there, and he's not much of a veteran in terms of NFL experience. Tom, what I'm saying is, in games where the pass rush doesn't show, as in New Orleans, they're going to get beat up downfield.
Yeah.
And I don't care that Carolina's got Curtis Samuel and, you know, DJ Moore, and these guys don't scare anybody. But if Kyle Allen's got time, that's just the way it is. He's going to find people. You got to make them uncomfortable. I think Bowles has had enough of that. He's watched that film till his eyes are bleeding. Tom in New Orleans, he's disgusted by how much time Bridgewater had, especially in relation to Winston running around, totally under pressure. Can't have that. They got whipped in the trenches, maybe for the first time this year. And if that happens again on Sunday, they're going to lose, Tom.
Well, you know, I'm very proud of us as a group here that Hargrave's name didn't come up until close to the end of this week's podcast, because I think people have been talking about him enough, and you know, people are crying into their beers this entire week when they're thinking about 28 and singles. This has been a season to forget, and that it was most certainly a game to forget. So before we get into predictions time, and before we get to thinking too much and dwelling too much on how terrible the secondary is, a little bit of schadenfreude. Atlanta, the Falcons, and people know this that listen to the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford, that you may have an in with some of the folks in the higher-ups, the front office over there, or maybe the owner's box up in Atlanta. The Falcons are 1-4, traveling to Arizona on Sunday, and I think you know where I'm going here. Bruce Allen already swung the guillotine on Jay Gruden. If a loss to the Cardinals happens for the Dirty Birds, could Dan Quinn get fired? And do you think that Arthur Blank would make Raheem Morris or Dirk Cutter the interim coach?
Well, I've been on record saying I think Raheem Morris deserves a second chance. Tom, I'm looking at some of the stories circulating around what's going on in Washington. And you've read the same stories. I'm seeing Todd Bowles' name in there.
Yep.
Now, you know, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong. Bowles was not a successful, head coach in New York. He just wasn't.
No,
part of the reason it's a dysfunctional, franchise, and I understand that. But if Todd Bowles is going to be mentioned, where is Raheem Morris? I mean, where is he? Morris has done everything you can possibly do as an assistant coach in this league. He's worked both sides of the lane. That is very unusual. Very unusual. And it's not like the Falcons haven't had a good passing offense. Since Raheem's taken over for the receivers, we know what he can do with the DBs. I am a Raheem Morris guy. He wasn't ready for that job, but something happened. Something bad happened in 2011. They started 3-1 under Morris. They ended up losing their last 10 games, and I guess the Glazers felt they had no choice but to fire him. Let's remember, somehow, some way, he squeezed 10 wins out of the 2010 Bucks. That was a fantastic coaching job. Now, they pulled games out of their butt with Josh Freeman, who had a big season, 25 touchdowns, 6 picks. But it happened, and they got 10 wins. And the Glazers told me that other than the Super Bowl year, that was the most enjoyable year they ever had as owners of this team. So let's not forget Raheem Morris let's not call him a disaster as a head coach. As far as Quinn's concerned, Tom, I go on with Mad Dog Russo every week, and I remember opening week of the season, one of the questions he asked me was, which coach is on the biggest hot seat? Well, I didn't want to say the obvious, which was Jay Gruden when the season began. I said Dan Quinn. It's hard to believe, Tom. The guy basically almost won the Super Bowl just a few years back.
Yeah.
28-3 on the Patriots. And that game crushed Arthur Blank, but they did represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. And since then, it's been nothing but trouble in Atlanta. They got Dirk Cutter. The offense is struggling. The defense looks terrible. And, Tom, that's the key. Quinn has taken over the defense. When you do that, and I believe Raheem did that in Tampa, Tom. Raheem took over the defense.
Yes, he did.
And defense sucked at the end of 2011.
Yes, it did.
Couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
And that cost Raheem, and there's nobody to blame, Tom. You can't blame anybody at that point. And you saw the Falcons against the Texans last week. I mean, that's a debacle. They put up, 50, 53, Tom?
Yeah, they did. Just tragic. It's tragic. I hated to see it.
I think Quinn will last the season, but I think his days are numbered. I think he's done at the end of the year. Arthur Blank will be in search of a replacement. I think he's got a good one. Right under his nose. in Raheem, and I think, you know, you never even hear Raheem's name, Tom, in terms of being interviewed.
Yeah.
You don't hear it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's a question of that he doesn't want another shot. So I'm a little puzzled about Raheem Morris. I think he's very personable, and I think he has matured. He was too young that time around. He got too close to his players, too close to a Josh Freeman. You can't go out to South Tampa with your quarterback. It's a bad look, and it ended up backfiring on Morris. That won't happen the second time around. I think he deserves another shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the season notwithstanding, and maybe Todd can help turn it around with a pass rush to where the pass defense numbers look a little bit better. But if I'm a fan of Washington or I'm a fan of anybody who's going to be in the market for a coach this offseason, and Todd Bowles' name comes up, I'm not jumping up and down and calling up for season tickets. It's not a name as a head coach that inspires me. But if you do what the Bucs did and you call him up to be a coordinator, I'm ecstatic. Some guys are coordinators and some guys are head coaches. But as I understand this, and maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong here, the Kyle Shanahan era on offense, not too long ago in Atlanta when they were firing on all seams and Ryan's winning MVP, all that stuff. Raheem was kind of the glue guy behind the scenes because Kyle can be tough, but I heard that Raheem was the good cop in that situation and the players adore him in that organization for it. Did you hear the same things?
I think that's an outstanding point. A little yin and yang, and so Morris was the yang, and they needed it. Because, you know, Shanahan's a hard ass. And you're right. They had a fantastic offense that year, including the Super Bowl against the Pats. Now, you know, one thing that I still can't get over, Tom, I still just can't get over it. Nobody backs me up on this. But everybody after that game, they're all over Shanahan after that fantastic catch by Julio Jones on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
Put him in field goal range and the game would have been over. And you know, everybody's killing Shanahan for his play calling after that on that sequence, and he took a sack. And nobody talked about blowing the 28-3 lead. I don't understand
that.
I mean, shouldn't that be enough? 28-3, win the freaking football game.
Absolutely.
Make a
stop.
Nobody wanted to talk about the defense on the Falcons. I'm sorry. I never, to this day, I don't understand why everybody's on Shanahan's butt, and nobody talked about the Falcon defense falling apart against Brady and company. Maybe you could explain that one to me.
I can't. I have similar frustrations. I don't want to die on this hill, but I'm a bit of an Alex Smith guy when in terms of the underappreciated quarterbacks in the league. And there are two games that dude has no business losing in the playoffs in his career. One was a wild card game against Indy where they put up 45 and lose. And there was another one where he had about four drops. This is the year before Mahomes took over. And people are blaming the quarterback, and I'm saying, do you watch the game? Because you have to watch the game in order for it to make sense, in order for you to make salient observations. To me, it's the defense of the Falcons, and then it was Devonta Freeman's misprotection on a third down. Those are the two key plays in the game. You can't convince me otherwise. But like I said, I cry a river for our division rivals, the Atlanta Falcons. It hurts me to my core that they're having these types of problems. But I love McKay, but it makes me quite happy. But we have gotten to the time that everybody's waiting for. Ira, I know it. You want to get off the schneid. You want to be 1-5, not 0-6 with your Bucks picks. But people, I think, in their heart of hearts are saying, pick the Panthers. Pick the Panthers. What say you for your podcast prediction this week?
Tom, I am going to break the hearts of people like Javier in Panama. Travis Combs, who was with me last week at Buffalo Wild Wings. They are screaming in my ear, pick the Panthers, pick the Panthers. No, I will not do so. I will not do so, Thomas. I will pick the Bucks for a simple reason. I think they got a better team than Carolina. Look, you got to stop losing a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Tom, you got to stop losing. I mean, Daniel Jones, you know, who might have a good NFL career ahead of him. Teddy Bridgewater, you know.
Derek Anderson.
And here comes the next guy up.
Yeah.
You know, sweep the Panthers. You're in second place in the division. You know, and look, I'm a realist. The Saints are a heck of a team with Breeze or without. They're going to be, if they represented the NFC in the Super Bowl, nobody would be shocked. Mm-hmm. Nobody. So I'm not saying I think the Bucs are going to win this division. I'm not saying that. But get ahead of Carolina, crawl ahead of them, because you swept them. Get the 3-3, and I can definitely see a scenario at that point, following a bye week, extra week to prepare for the Titans, who don't do anything fancy on offense anyway, that it takes you 2 weeks to prepare. They are what they are. They're a plodding offense and a pretty good defense, but very beatable. And maybe JPP comes back. I can clearly see a path for the Bucs to play meaningful games in December. But they got to win this football game,
yeah.
Tom, and I think they will. The Bucs will win this game 23-16, and they walk out of Charlotte and step on McCoy's neck in the process.
Well, yeah, that would be a season sweep. Man, you know, people will be on the edge of their seats on a Sunday morning into the early afternoon hours if it's 23-16. And by the way, if you were on the NFL game day desk, Mr. Sage, you would be the lone wolf and you'd be howling because DeKemper thinks the Bucs haven't turned the corner. He said 27-17 Panthers. Isbitz went 24-20 Panthers. So in terms of the regulars here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, you, sir, are a lone wolf. Do you have...
Wait a minute, Lang. You're not getting away with this. You have to make a pick, sir.
I do?
You must make a pick. Okay. You must.
All right. I'm bidding to go undefeated. I'm like the interim coach who wins that game in Week 17 and never is a head coach again. Let's see if I can do it. I agree with you, and here's why I do, that the Bucs are going to win this game. If you look in the trenches, by about the middle of the second quarter of the New Orleans game, you realize that this is a completely different animal, that it's a step up from even the Rams, and the Rams have Aaron Donald and Fowler on the defensive line, but New Orleans' front group is more complete than that of the LA Rams. And then offensively, I mean, you look at that O-line, it's just Cam Jordan always shows out against the Bucs. But in the game against the Panthers, the O-line was able, I know that the right side's going to be a little bit shuffled here, but the O-line was able to generate a little bit of a run. And they've got to be, if you're a Panthers fan this week, you've got to be having nightmares about Barrett. I mean, listen, Bucs are defeatist going into this game, but Panthers fans have to be scared, you know whatless, that Barrett's going to go off again because they didn't have an answer for him and they're banged up on the offensive line. So with all that said, I think the Bucs do end up winning this game 20-13. It's a very similar score to the first time they played. It's usually sloppy conditions out there in London. The weather's not going to help at all. So I think this game is low scoring. I'll stand with you as a temp, as an interim, 20-13 Tampa Bay.
You are a good man. You don't want me hanging on that clothesline
No.
all by myself, Mr. Lang.
I don't.
Well done.
We've already bonded, so I can't do that to you. I will stand beside you because, listen, do they have Hall of Fame votes? No. You do. I want to stand next to the guy who has the Hall of Fame vote.
Tom, this up and down season, loss, win, loss, win, loss. I think the up and down season continues. And I think it might change markedly after the bye week, hopefully. They need to stack them up, Tom.
Yeah.
They have not yet done so. They don't need to stack up losses, Thomas. I'm out of here.
All right. Thanks, Ira. I really appreciate it. And maybe we'll talk together down the line sometime.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
All right. Be well. That is Mr. Ira Kaufman, the custodian of Canton. He's the sage. He's the Baron of Buffalo Wild Wings. And you heard him. He's going to be at B-Dubs this weekend. It's going to be an early kick. Will the Bloody Marys be extra bloody because we're miserable? Or will the champagne be flowing in a mimosa or whatever pitcher of beer you enjoy? And I know he would recommend try the Philly cheesesteak. I do listen to this podcast when I'm not a guest host. It has been an honor to be standing in for so many of the hosts here at JoeBucksFan.com for the Ira Kaufman podcast, brought to you all season long by our friends at Bill Curry for GM Sean Sullivan. He sponsors the Scuttlebucks with myself and Jeff Cameron on Wednesdays right here on JoeBucksFan.com. They were the sponsor last season of the Joe Bolts Fan podcast right here on JoeBucksFan.com. Support those who support local coverage. Support Bill Curry Ford. It has been a pleasure, folks. Tampa Bay, let's see if the Sage is right, if your interim guy is right, or if the Joes are correct about their predictions. This has been the Ira Kaufman podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Wait a minute, Lang. You're not getting away with this.